21 through Matthew chapter 5, 48, he's going to say how to have an inward righteousness, how to deal with some of the things that humanity has struggled with forever. Just a quick example of these six things. When you're at odds with someone, we're going to talk about that today, you've heard it said, don't murder, but I say, watch your anger. With issues of sexual attraction, you've heard it said, no intercourse, but I say, no cultivation of lust. When you're unhappy with your spouse, you've heard it said, get a certificate for divorce, but I say, God sees past the paper. When you have a circumstance that you're wanting to be believed, you've heard it said, keep your oath, but I say, speak truth always. There's no need for an oath. There's a circumstance, if you're personally injured, you want to inflict the same kind of pain onto somebody else, but Jesus says instead, help them in return. When you have an enemy, you've heard it said, hate your enemy, but I say to you, bless them instead. We're going to really dive into all of these over the next 6 weeks, but do you notice anything kind of consistently about them? They're all about dealing with other people and relationships. Before Jesus is going to tell us how to relate to God, he's going to say horizontal relationships matter a lot. The relationships that you have with one another, your coworkers, your spouse, your friends, those things matter even before we think about worship. In chapter 6, he's going to explain some things about how to worship God and the ways that we can connect our lives to God. But he says from the very get-go, you have to understand that horizontal relationships matter a lot. Eugene Boring says this, all six of the antitheses deal with relations between human beings, not with religious rituals that express humanity's relation to God. And I promise that guy's a lot more interesting than he sounds. I feel like if I had the last name Boring, I would just legally change my last name because you just deal, I would get to invite the Borings to our party again. It just seems like, and I think I would you'd probably hear that joke a million times and people don't even know them are making it. But Jesus, before he's going to get to explaining how to connect to God, there's these six ways that we connect to each other. How we're going to relate to our neighbors, our friends, our family members. And Jesus starts with anger. We all know what it is to be angry. Luckily, there's not much traffic usually on Sunday morning, so you probably weren't too angry on the freeway getting here. When was the last time you were angry about something? A few months ago, this wasn't the last time I was, but a few months ago, my friend Jonathan Storman, who's coming for the Risen Conference in a few weeks, he was here, and he got a weird phone call on his cell phone, and he put on speakerphone. I don't know if you've gotten this call before, but it's from this guy who claims to be a spiritual guru, and he says that if you give your name and information, then he'll pray for you, and he'll pray in his prayer closet for you or something like that, and we're listening to this on speakerphone, thinking that it's weird, and then Jonathan says, would you like to give your name? And he says, yes, my name is Brian Shackman. And I mean, I didn't really care. It wasn't that big of a deal. And then it says, well, what's your address, Brian? And I didn't think he had it, but he saw a little letter that was on my table and he started to give my address, my home address to this spiritual guru. And that caused me to run and tackle him and grab the phone and make sure that it didn't happen. And after that, as we were kind of dusting each other off, I was thinking, what is it that made me like freak out about that? Who really cares if this spiritual guru has my address? I don't think he's going to show up or anything. This seems so unlike me. And it is. I don't usually get that upset, but don't try to give my address to anybody, all right? Or else I might freak out on you. Different things cause us to react in different ways. Sometimes it's things that you wouldn't expect. It can get you upset. It can cause you to flip out and react in a way that you wouldn't expect and say, that's really unlike me. But Jesus says that it is like you. Jesus says that it's out of the heart that the mouth speaks. It's out of the heart that we act. And sometimes when we say things or when we do things, we think, that's not like me at all. But Jesus says you have to work on the inside. It's the heart that matters. And really, anger has been a problem since the beginning of time. In Genesis chapter 4, verses 2 through 5, it says, now Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. So Cain's brother brings the offering from his flocks. He works in the flocks, so he brings this offering. And God is pleased with this offering. And Abel brings the good offering. Cain brings the bad one. And Cain is upset. He's angry. He's downcast. There are lots of theories about why Cain's sacrifice wasn't as good, but we aren't exactly sure why. But the point of this story is that he's angry. He's downcast. And the question is, what do we do with our anger? Because the question isn't, am I ever going to get angry again or frustrated again? You will get angry and frustrated again. The question is, what will you do with it? And how do you guard yourself against reacting out of anger or living out of anger? In the Old Testament, Jesus says, it was said, do not murder. But that doesn't work, really, right? And I know a lot of very angry non-murderers, you know, including myself from time to time. I mean, not murdering doesn't really do the trick. And so the question from this story as we think about Cain and Abel is, what do we do with our anger? Because we know what happens. Cain kills his brother. He has this anger. He's not sure what to do with it. And so he kills his brother. What do we do with our anger? How are we supposed to respond? How do we make it better? How do we work through our anger? Jesus teaches in Matthew 5, 21 and 22, you've heard it said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. Anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. I don't know about you, but right when I read that, I think, can we just stick with the non-murdering rule? That sounds a whole lot easier. Let's go back to that one. And on its surface, this seems like an impossible task. I mean, just don't get angry ever again. It sounds like we should just give up because it can't be done. But it's important to go a little bit deeper with this passage. When Jesus says, who is angry, it's actually a participle. And so it can be better translated, being angry. So anyone who's being angry is subject, could be subject to judgment. There's a big difference there. Jesus is changing the target of how to work on anger. Eventually, actually, Jesus is going to kind of contradict himself because in Matthew 23, he calls some religious leaders blind fools. And so if we're to get to a point that we never get angry, then even Jesus didn't do that. So what is Jesus trying to get us to do here? What does it mean to be angry? What I think Jesus is teaching here is not don't be angry, but don't stay angry. And he teaches that through saying raca, which is a term of disrespect, or you fool. When you are calling someone else a name, you're labeling them and keeping your anger and using your anger to dehumanize them. So Jesus says, don't do that because you're going to dehumanize someone and keep that anger about them in your heart. So Jesus is saying, don't stay angry. Not don't be angry, don't stay angry. I play golf from time to time at the DeBell 3-par up here on the hill in Burbank. I know Yvonne likes to play there too. It's a great course. It's only $4. It's very cheaply maintained, but it works. And one of the holes, it's over, so I guess it's, you could consider it the water trap of the course. There's never actually any water inside it, just a little like runoff ravine. But when I first started playing on that course, it was almost impossible for me to not hit it inside this thing because I was so focused on it. And eventually someone who actually plays a lot of golf said, the way to hit it over it is to not think about it. It's like Yoda, you know, just there is no water trap, basically. And it helped. It helped me a lot. I learned how to get past that, and now I don't really hit it in the water that much or the water that much when I go to that course. There's a famous course at TPS Sawgrass, the hole. It's a course in Florida. Look at this hole. Yeah, I don't even know how a person can do that. But somehow they make it work. And the key, sports psychologists say, whenever you're dealing with something like that, whether it's a golfer trying to hit into water or something else, is don't think about the obstacle at all. Because your brain, when you say the word don't to your brain, it often doesn't register don't. And so it just kind of leads you to that thing. So don't hit it into the water, or as a pitcher, don't throw it over the catcher's head. It could lead to some bad throws. And as a basketball player, don't miss. If you're thinking about don't, sometimes your brain doesn't register that. You have to change your target. And I think Jesus is changing our target here. He's changing the target, not from don't get angry, but don't consistently be angry. Don't stay angry. If Jesus commanded us to never be angry, that would be kind of an impossible ideal. It would be an impossible thing for us to practice. But instead, he diagnoses a problem of the heart, a vicious cycle that can lead us to destruction, that if we choose to stay angry, it can lead us to bad situations. It's like a doctor's diagnosis when diagnosing a tumor that will lead to death if not removed. Jesus says, remove anger. Don't stay angry. Don't stay angry about situations. And so he's changing our target. He's not saying don't be angry, but don't stay there. We can't honestly completely avoid anger. If we did, we'd probably have to be perfect people. But we can avoid staying there, right? So that's the question. Will you stay angry? Will you stay angry at that friend who wronged you 2 years ago? Will you stay angry at that coworker who got that job over you that you feel like you should have gotten? Will you stay angry at that family member who did something wrong to you a long time ago? And here's the truth about anger. As much as we don't like to admit it, you know, we're kind of good church people here. It's nice. It's kind of alluring. It's nice to be angry. It's kind of nice to think about that day when you're going to get revenge, to play that over in your mind, to think about how nice that will be. Anger is alluring and it's tempting. It's easy to keep it in our heart and just say, you know, someday I'm going to make this right. I love this quote about this. Of the seven deadly sins, anger is possibly the most fun. To lick your wounds, to smack your lips over grievances long past, to roll over your tongue the prospect of bitter confrontation still to come, to savor the last toothsome morsel, try saying that five times fast, both the pain you're given and the pain you're giving back. In many ways is a feast fit for a king. The chief drawback is that you're wolfing down, what you're wolfing down is yourself. The skeleton at the feast is you. And when you let anger sit in your heart, when you remain angry about a situation, it's really not the other person that's really paying for that. It's you. LeBron James, who's probably the most famous basketball player right now, outside of Kobe Bryant maybe, but worldwide, LeBron is extremely popular. And just a few years ago, a few summers back, he made probably the worst decision of his career. He was a free agent. He could go anywhere he wanted to any team. And he was on the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he scheduled this crazy press conference that was called The Decision. Here's a picture of it, Brian, where he was going to announce to the world what team he was going to go play for. This is probably the most arrogant thing an athlete has ever done. And he did it at a Boys and Girls Club to make it seem like, I'm doing good things for the world too. But really, in reality, he just thought he was the most important guy in the world, and he was going to make this decision, and everybody needed to watch it. And of course, I did, but everyone else did as well. And so during this press conference, he announces that the famous statement, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, which is his way of saying that he was going to go play for the Miami Heat. And this was really kind of a bad thing because not only did it seem kind of arrogant of him to do to the rest of the world, but also he was leaving the Cleveland Cavaliers, which was his hometown team, leaving his hometown team behind. And so immediately they started showing videos of people burning his jerseys in Cleveland and just this whole world revolting. And so people who didn't really have a feeling either way, as a casual fan either way about LeBron James, even people like me started thinking, I hope he never wins anything. You know, I want him to never come through in the clutch. Eventually, the world started turning on him. He was one of the most well-liked basketball players, but everyone turned on him after this moment. And so in that next season, when he first played with the Miami Heat, he just decided that he was going to play angry. He decided that he was just going to go through and make sure that everyone who was angry at him finally paid. And after a while, it exhausted him. They made it to the NBA Finals because their team was so talented. They kind of cheated because they put a bunch of players together. I could talk about that another time. But he completely disappeared in the NBA Finals against the Dallas Mavericks. Luckily for Spencer Hutchins down here, who's a Mavericks fan. But in the fourth quarter of some of those games, all the analysts, there's just like a blank face, blank stare on LeBron's face as he was playing in these fourth quarters when he should have been playing his best. He was mostly standing on the outside, not doing anything. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. LeBron coming back the next season, he had this quote before the season started. He said, I play the game fun, joyful, and I let my game do all the talking. And I got away from that. That's what I lost last year. Going through my first 7 years in the NBA, I was always the liked one. And to be on the other side, they'll call it the dark side or the villain or whatever they call it. It was definitely challenging. And so LeBron learned that it was better to play from joy than from anger. So he let go of that villain role, unfortunately, for the rest of the NBA. And he's been playing unbelievably ever since. He won his first NBA title last year. They look like the favorites to win it again. He won a gold medal last summer in the Olympics. He's basically just turned his whole career around. Now he's considered one of the best and clutchest players in the league. He learned that playing from joy is a lot better than playing from anger. In what situations of your life are you still playing mad? Are you letting anger be a motivation, not joy? Where you have some anger in your heart that you haven't dealt with, that God's called you to deal with a few times, that you've just kind of pushed off to the side, and you said, no, I kind of want to just let go of that. I'm ignoring that for now, but it boils up in other situations and other ways. In what situations in your life are you playing angry? Maybe it's time you did something about it. Jesus continues to teach here in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 23 through 26. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who's taking you to court. Do it while you're still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will not get out until you've paid the last penny. What are Jesus' words for dealing with anger? Find a way to resolve it. Take a step to get through it. And for some of you, that may mean going and reconciling with someone, but maybe you're just not at that point yet, but maybe you can just get to a point where you don't call them a name behind their back. And what is a step that you can take to deal with anger that's in your heart? I know that we're generally nice church people. The only song we could come up with that even talks about anger at all is Angry Words. You know that one? You know, angry words, oh, let them never, that old song. It's not really biblical exactly, because in the psalm, there's a lot of angry words being expressed to God. Sometimes the best way to deal with anger is to work through it. And oftentimes at church, we just kind of let it boil under the surface and don't really deal with it. We don't really want to talk about it. But sometimes the best way to not stay angry is to work through anger. When I was in seminary, I was in my last year of school, it was one of the hardest times in my life. I found out that my parents were getting a divorce. It was something that kind of just threw me through a loop. I was really confused about my future in ministry. It was my last year. I was right about to get ready into ministry, and it just kind of made me question God, question my foundation, question my life. And one of the things that I was, besides confused, was very, very angry. And I was upset about what was happening, upset about what was going on. And my friend advised me to go talk with a counselor about the situation. Let me tell you, if you ever have a chance to talk with a counselor about anything, I would recommend it. It was a huge blessing for me to have somebody to kind of look at your life from like a 360-degree angle and think about the things that you maybe haven't thought about and different approaches. And he gave me some wisdom that I've used ever since. He said, "Brian, you're obviously angry about this situation, and rightfully so. And you need to deal with that anger." So he gave me the advice to spend however long per day that I needed angry. He said, "During that time, you're driving the car, but you're letting anger be in the passenger seat and talk to you." And so I did that. I would run around the track at ACU's campus and just kind of run around at night and just be angry as I was running. But people probably thought I was crazy out there, as I was just kind of saying things about what was going on, expressing my frustration to God. And as it started, I used to do it for 15 minutes, and I would just kind of talk and be angry for that 15 minutes. But anger after a while exhausts itself. It gets to a point you don't need to be angry anymore. And so at first I started doing that, and it would be for 15 minutes, and the next night was 15 minutes. And after a little while it was down to 10, and it was down to 5. Then I wasn't really angry anymore. And I found it so extremely difficult to try and focus on my studies. When you're trying to learn Hebrew, it's hard enough. But when you're angry learning Hebrew, it's even worse. But eventually I was able to get back and get through it and get back into my studies and finish up my year and finish up what God was calling me to do. It's because I allowed myself to deal with that anger, to give it its voice, to give it some time, but to work through it and not stay there. Be committed to get out to the other side. What are situations in your life where you're staying angry? And maybe for you that's to reconcile, to go to a person and say, "I'm sorry about that." Or maybe you've had some anger towards God that you need to let out and question. Jesus doesn't say don't get angry. He says don't stay angry, because that's a dangerous place for you to be. If you're living out of anger instead of living out of joy, it's a dangerous place to be. Back to the story of Cain and Abel. As Jesus talks here about how you have to leave an offering behind, it's a very Jewish way of referencing the story of Cain and Abel. He's remembering a story about a time when a guy brought an offering, and a murder ended up happening. So Jesus is sharing and kind of making people recall back to that sacrifice. And again, we don't know exactly what was wrong with Cain's sacrifice. There are many theories. We don't know for sure. I think that's the point. Because the point isn't what kind of offering or what was wrong with the offering. It's that Cain got angry and he didn't know what to do with his anger. The point of that story is that you can't divorce worshiping God from how you treat other people. That it matters to God how you treat others so much. Jesus says that you would leave your offering and go reconcile with your brother or sister. That sounds crazy enough to us, because that's like an awkward, it's kind of awkward to do that. But in that society, that's even crazier, because people would travel for days to get to the temple to make these sacrifices. So these people would hear that as Jesus says it and think, "What? So I've got to travel 3 days to Jerusalem, and if I come up with something, I've got to settle with my friend back in town. I've got to travel 3 days back before I can finish my worship." And Jesus says, "Yes." Because it matters a lot to God, not just the way that you think, feel, and act towards God, the way that you think, feel, and act towards others matters as well. For Jesus, relationship trumps worship. As God comes and finds Cain, he asks him, "Where's your brother?" And what's Cain's response? You can talk. "Am I my brother's keeper?" says, am I my brother's keeper? The answer is yes. We are our brothers and sisters' keepers. The way that we treat our brothers and sisters matters deeply to God. So am I my brother and sister's keeper? The answer is yes. And the way that we act to them sometimes out of our anger puts up walls between us that keeps us from full relationship with them. Jesus says, take some steps to work on those walls because we are our brothers and sisters' keepers. We're going to kind of close service a little differently. We usually close with a song. But today I want you to think about these three questions. They're up there somewhere. There we go. Think about these three questions. We're going to have a worship song playing in the background, but I'd like you to think, what are you angry about? Whom are you angry with? And what is the first step to let that go? What's the first step you could take towards reconciliation? And some of you may be in a great point in your life and you're like, I don't have an answer for any of those questions, and that's good. Then spend this time praying for people who do have some issues in this room. But I'd like you to think about these things. Think about these questions and just kind of have a moment of prayer for a couple minutes as we listen to this song. Then we'll come back together for just a moment.